You're listening to the Blue Ridge True Crime Podcast, bringing you compelling true crime stories from the Appalachian Mountains and beyond. I'm your host, Alfred Dockery. Grab your hat and the lantern, and let's get on the trail. A quick programming note before we get into the episode. You might have noticed the episodes have been a bit spaced out here in Season 2. That's because I'm in the final stages of editing my new book, Crimes, Curiosities, and Legends of the Appalachian Backroads. Getting those stories onto the page has demanded a lot of my attention, which has impacted production here on the show. The good news is that we're in the home stretch. I'm on track to publish the ebook and paperback by the end of April. If you'd like a sneak peek at the book, the first half of the first chapter is available on the Blue Ridge True Crime Substack. Thank you for sticking with me during this busy season. Now, on to the episode. The Woman Who Saw Everything. It all started with a search for a moonshine still, which in 1920s Kentucky was the beginning of many a story. Deputy U.S. Marshal Adrian Metcalf and Deputy Sheriff Art Hensley had a tip that a moonshiner had set up shop in an abandoned mine shaft on Ivy Hill, just outside the town limits of Harlan, Kentucky. It was late on the afternoon of October 20th, 1925. As the lawman pushed deeper into the darkness looking for a hidden still, Metcalf noticed a peculiar pile of stone. Upon closer examination, he made a gruesome discovery. Beneath the fallen rock, in a narrow space under a low roof, lay the body of a young girl. It was too badly decomposed to be identified. From the Friday, October 23, 1925, Harlan Daily Enterprise. A rag, a bone, and a hang of hair is all that remains to identify the decomposed body of a girl, apparently 15 years old, which was found in the entry of an abandoned mine between Harlan and Baxter late Wednesday afternoon. The victim wore a light felt hat, a heavy twill coat, cheap tan shoes, and silk bloomers. The discovery immediately raised a troubling question. Was this the body of Mary Vickery? Mary Vickery, a 14-year-old girl, had vanished from her home in nearby Coxton 2 months earlier on August 17th. The story of her disappearance was a puzzle in itself. She had left home on an errand for her mother, accompanied by two other girls. Later that day, her friends returned, saying Mary had stayed behind to wait for the mail at the post office. She was never seen again. It was as if she'd simply vanished into thin air. Mary's father, E.C. Vickery, said the hat looked like the one Mary had worn, but the coat gave him pause. Mary had disappeared in the middle of August. Why would she be wearing a heavy coat? Also, the decomposition of the body seemed advanced for just 2 months. Doubts crept in. Perhaps this was another girl, another victim. The discovery of this body was the third mystery to plague Harlan in less than a year. In February, Roxy Baker, a 16-year-old Coxton girl, had been thrown from a car near the Methodist Church and killed. Her murderer had not been found. Then came the disappearance of the Vickery girl, followed by the discovery of the body in the mine. Did these three mysteries, the February murder, Mary's disappearance, and the newly found body involve only two victims? Or did the body belong to a third victim? As the Harlan Daily Enterprise put it at the time, whether these three mysteries include only two women, whether there is a different woman to each side of the triangular mystery, it is a situation demanding the serious attention of citizens and officers alike. A later search of the mine found a small ring set with a red ruby, which Mary's father said resembled the ring he had bought for his daughter shortly before she disappeared. There are conflicting accounts of how the ring was found. Some sources state the investigators found it the following morning when they returned to the mine. Others maintain that Mary's father visited the mine himself and found it. According to these accounts, the ring was covered in decayed flesh, and a friend accompanying Vickery had to carry it out on a stick because he was unwilling to touch it. The same sources report that Vickery also found a fragment of stocking with a distinct repair or darn in the shape of the letter L that he remembered seeing in one of Mary's stockings. Based on the hat and the ring, the body was officially identified as Mary Vickery. The cause of death could not be determined. The skull and bones were intact. The question of who killed her and why remained. The mine entry where her body was found was off the main road, reachable only by a rough mountain trail. The officers were at a loss. The trail had gone cold, and as the final line of the newspaper article hauntingly concluded, it is possible that this tragedy will be recorded among the unsolved mysteries. Enter the taxi man. In January 1925, Condi Dabney traveled to Coxton, Kentucky, and found a job mining coal there. After 6 months or so in the mines, he bought an old Ford and started a taxi service. He had been uncertain of his prospects in Kentucky, and so had left his wife and two children in Coal Creek, Tennessee. In September, he received a letter from his wife informing him that one of the children was sick. He returned to Tennessee and found what work he could nearby until the child recovered. His departure 2 weeks after the Vickery girl vanished made local authorities suspicious that he might have been involved in the girl's disappearance and apparent murder. In mid-November, Dabney was arrested in Coal Creek by Tennessee authorities at Kentucky's request, but he was quickly released. He must have convinced them that he had nothing to do with the crime. On November 17, an Associated Press article reported that Kentucky had issued a warrant for his arrest, charging him with the murder of Mary Vickers. The story, which urged police in Clinton, Coal Creek, and Carryville to apprehend him, was published in newspapers across the Southeast, including five in Tennessee. Meanwhile, in Kentucky, a witness came forward implicating Dabney and then left town before she could be questioned further. Consequently, the grand jury did not return a true bill of indictment against him. On December 10, Kentucky Governor William J. Fields offered a $500 reward for the capture and conviction of the unknown persons who murdered Miss Mary Vickery, a move that would have unexpected consequences. In early March, Dabney returned to Coxton to visit relatives there, which likely explains why he chose to seek work there in the first place. Some versions of the story say he returned to clear his good name, but that does not seem to be the case. The state's witness had also returned. And quicker than you can say, in retrospect, I should have stayed in Tennessee, Dabney found himself in the Harlan County Jail, charged with murder. Competing stories from the stand. Condi Dabney's two-day trial opened in Harlan, Kentucky on Monday, March 29, 1926, before Circuit Judge J.G. Forster. The courtroom was filled with what one local reporter described as curious mountain folk. The court was packed to overflowing, and people stood around the walls or crowded into galleries. Some brought chairs and placed them in the aisles. The prosecution's case centered on the testimony of Marie Jackson, identified as a chum of the slain girl. Jackson testified that on the day Mary Vickery disappeared, she and Vickery had ridden into town with Dabney. Later that day, Dabney approached Jackson and told her he wanted to take Vickery for a ride in the country, but Vickery would only go if Jackson came along. Jackson agreed. Dabney drove them to the abandoned mine, the same site where Vickery's body was later found. The three were sitting on a log talking when Dabney asked Jackson to take a walk so he could speak with Vickery alone. Instead of walking away, Jackson testified she circled back to a spot where she could watch them. She saw Dabney make advances toward Vickery, which she rejected. Enraged, he picked up a stick and struck her in the head. Vickery fell to the ground unmoving and apparently dead. Jackson said she then watched Dabney pick up the body and carry it into the mine. When asked why she had waited so long to come forward, Jackson testified that Dabney had threatened her. He said he would carry me to the highest mountain in Harlan County and burn me at the stake if I told. Dabney took the stand in his own defense. He testified that he did not specifically remember ever having Mary Vickery in his taxi, though he acknowledged it was possible as he drove many people he did not know. He said he knew Marie Jackson and had occasionally driven her and various men to different places. Dabney denied ever having been to Ivy Hill where the mine was located and called Jackson's testimony false. He explained that he had left Coxton not to flee, but because he had received a letter saying one of his children was ill. He maintained his innocence, insisting that he knew nothing about the disappearance of Mary Vickery. At noon on Tuesday, the case went to the jury. Early in their deliberations, they appeared deadlocked, with six in favor of the death penalty, five for life imprisonment, and one for acquittal. By Wednesday morning, the jurors had reached a consensus, returned a guilty verdict, and fixed Dabney's punishment at life imprisonment. His lawyer began the appeal process, and Dabney was transported to the state penitentiary at Frankfort. A most shocking development. Almost a year later, on the evening of March 19th, Town Marshal George Davis was paging through the register at a hotel in Williamsburg, Kentucky, about 75 miles west of Coxton, when a familiar name jumped off the page, Mary Vickery. The Vickery family had lived in Williamsburg before moving to Coxton. When she returned to the hotel, Davis recognized her immediately. One can only imagine the awkward, bewildered conversation that followed. "Wait, aren't you dead?" She told the authorities that she had left Coxton 18 months earlier with $5 in her pocketbook because she couldn't get along with her stepmother. She had taken a taxi to the train station but did not know the driver's name. Her description of him, however, matched the tall, raw-boned mountaineer, Condy Dabney. She had never heard of Marie Jackson. In the months since leaving, she had traveled around, working as a waitress in Livingston, a maid in Berea, and eventually landing a job at a woolen mill in Cincinnati. She was back in Williamsburg visiting friends. Her return to Coxton, like a ghost from the grave, led the prosecutor in Dabney's case, G.J. Jarvis, to launch a detailed investigation and join Dabney's defense attorney, C.G. Rawlings, in requesting a pardon from Governor Fields. Vickery's reappearance prompted Jackson to confess to perjury and launch a new storyline about the body found in the mine. She now stated that the body was that of Leela Cole, a married woman estranged from her husband, who was slain by a miner named Charlie Williams. Cole had gone missing in December of 1924. Jackson stated that Charlie Williams killed Mrs. Cole at Richard Pike's boarding house where Cole lived, and wrapped the body in a cloak. Jackson said she was standing at the Harlan Bank when Williams drove by and invited her to take a ride with him. She joined him, noticed the bundle in the back, and asked about it. Williams then told her about the killing and drove to the mine. Marie claims she fled as Williams carried the body into the mine shaft. Later, Williams gave her $50 to keep still about what she knew. Apparently, Jackson felt obligated to attend every murder and illicit burial in the immediate vicinity. While I admire the effort, I feel like supporting a local sports team would have been a far more wholesome pastime and offered better opportunities for casual conversation. Jackson also said that Leela Cole was friends with Roxy Baker, the young woman thrown from a car in February 1925, and hinted that these incidents were linked. By this point, authorities had begun to realize that Marie Jackson occupied a murky space somewhere between an unreliable historian and a compulsive liar. To test Jackson's past and present assertions, authorities conducted a lineup of young women at the jail, and Jackson was unable to identify Mary Vickery. In a separate lineup, she also failed to pick out the miner, Charlie Williams. No longer able to trust any of her claims, they declined to take her word for the dead woman's identity, and the question of who was found in the mine shaft remains unanswered to this day. Jackson's motivation for testifying against Dabney was twofold. She wanted the $500 reward which had been offered, and other accounts say that she wanted Dabney to leave his wife and children and have a relationship with her. He refused, and for revenge, she gave testimony that sent him to the penitentiary. On Monday, March 21, 1927, Governor Fields granted Condy Dabney a full and free pardon, releasing him from his sentence of life imprisonment for the murder of Mary Vickery. Dabney returned to his family in Coal Creek. Jackson was convicted of false swearing and sentenced to 5 years in prison. On the same day as Jackson's conviction, March 27, Mary Vickery married C.E. Dempsey, a painter who worked for her father and who she had known since childhood. How's that for a happy ending? That's it for this episode of the Blue Ridge True Crime Podcast. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please hit subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps more people find the show. Check the show notes for links to the Blue Ridge True Crime Substack and YouTube channel, and any story-related links. Until next time, I'll look for you on the back roads.